Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, May 14th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt's attorneys warn of staffing crisis. County conversations with Supervisor Michelle Bushnell. And Governor Newsom urges cities to clear homeless encampments. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County's budget struggles are hampering its ability to pay competitive wages, and prosecution and defense attorneys have described the consequences to the Board of Supervisors. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Staff from Humboldt County's district attorneys and public defender's offices have told the Board of Supervisors they're underpaid and overworked at crisis levels. The effects of a revenue-deprived county budget were on full display at the May 13th supervisors' meeting, where county attorneys and other workers warned of staff defections due to difficult working situations. The platform for the comments is opened by Assembly Bill 2561, a state law that requires governments to hold annual public hearings on staff vacancy rates and recruitment. That gives employee representatives a chance to describe that from their perspectives. And describe they did, with County Attorneys Association Representative Carolyn Schaefer saying county prosecution and defense attorney staffing shortages are, quote, beyond the pale, with severe burnout from low pay and high workloads.
We are the lowest paid in the state. And so when we're competing with 30 other counties for recruitment, we don't stand a chance. We're not even on an equal playing field with our neighbors. And so do we expect our numbers to continue to dwindle? Or do we expect them to hold steady? We certainly can't expect them to grow. And where we are right now in terms of numbers, we are so low, we are in absolute crisis. And it's only going to get worse. And so we're asking this board for a 21% pay increase just to be on par with Del Norte County. We still won't meet the numbers that Mendocino has or Trinity, but at least we can compete, and at least we can convince people not to leave.
Staff from the county's Department of Human Resources had told supervisors the vacancy rate among attorneys is about 19% and 18% among county employees generally. But that's as of early February and is based on incomplete data. Schaefer said the DA's office's vacancy rate is actually at 39% now, with only 11 positions out of 18 staffed. Public Defender's Office Representative David Chelley said the situation is as bad in his office and has reached critical mass after escalating for years.
There's been a decay, and it didn't start last year. This is a long-term decay that's happened that has caused the district attorney's office and the public defender's office to be underfunded, understaffed. And it's getting to the point where our members are looking around at these other counties, these other job opportunities, and they're getting wandering eyes. They want to be in Humboldt County because it's a beautiful place to live, but at a certain point, there's a structural problem in how you're going to make a living and how you're going to see a future in this county, and that we're there. The vacancy rate speaks for itself, but I see in my own office people that are just constantly frustrated with the workload and the lack of staff. It's just pervasive all the time. As far as the vacancy rate itself, it doesn't really go to the caseload that we deal with either. I ran my own numbers, and I'm a senior deputy, so I only deal with felony cases. And there's guidelines as to what I'm supposed to do with my job. So it's about 50 open felonies. As of last Friday, I'm carrying 113 open felonies. So more than double of what I'm supposed to be doing.
Deputy Public Defender Ryan McClurg summed up his overwork, underpay job situation by saying, quote, I work 60 hours a week, so I can't see my family and am in debt by working in the public defender's office. Pay is also low for other county employees, supervisors were told, making working for the county a comparatively unfavorable proposition. Supervisor Steve Madrone said the county is paying as much as it can, and even if current levels are merely sustained, the county will descend into debt.
You know, what we're trying to figure out is, what do we do about it? Because if we just spend money that we don't have, we put the county into massive debt at the tune of $15 million a year or something to try and maintain what we're currently doing, which is understaffed. How does that work? How do we just go into debt for $15 million in 1 year, 2 years, $30 million, 3 years, $45 million? How do we do that and be responsible to the community? I don't think we can. So what we're trying to figure out is, where do we cut costs? Is it in staff? I hope not. But we've got to try and figure that out. And so if you all have any suggestions on where we can save money and still provide services, still hold on to our staff and value them and not have them leave and go to other counties, please, we're all ears for that.
Madrone floated an idea for increasing revenue. He said if residents buy locally instead of shopping online, the sales tax revenues will stay in Humboldt. Meanwhile, he said he's struggling with this, adding, quote, "It's not a pretty picture." There was no decision before supervisors, and they voted only to receive and file the report. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In tonight's edition of County Conversations, our monthly check-in with Humboldt County Supervisors, we speak with Michelle Bushnell, who represents Humboldt's 2nd District, which includes the cities and unincorporated towns along the 101 corridor from Benbow to Fortuna, and stretches east to west from Bridgeville to Shelter Cove. Supervisor Bushnell shared updates on the Garberville Vets Hall, new state funding for mental health infrastructure, and local efforts to address wildfire risk tied to homeless encampments. Good afternoon, Supervisor Bushnell, and thank you for joining us. One of the big stories this month was the Board of Supervisors approving, by a 4-1 vote, the reconstruction of the John Haynes Veterans Memorial Hall at its original site. Can you talk about what it means for local veterans and the broader community, and what the projected timeline for construction looks like?
Sure. So, of course, for the veterans, it means that they get their home back and they won't have to continue to be displaced. They're ecstatic. It was a very emotional meeting. They made Garberville veterans made lots of public comment, as well as veterans from the other areas, Fortuna, Ferndale, and Arcata, as well as a lot of community members. What it means for the whole of Southern Humboldt is that there'll be a venue that is affordable and has a commercial kitchen and is in Central Garberville area. So that'll be great. Construction will start within the next 60 days. I am hopeful to have that building buttoned up outside by December so that the internal work can happen during the winter. And so, you know, I think a year from now, we're going to have a veterans hall in that spot ready to go.
Many in the community feel that rebuilding the vets hall was a long overdue promise to local veterans. That said, we know that one dissenting vote came from a concern over the county's ongoing budget deficit. How do you see this project affecting the county's financial outlook going forward?
Sure. So it's about $3.6 million. We're going to use that out of our finance plan, which has interest on it, and we'll have to pay that back. It's a lot of money to expend right now, wherein we are, saying and looking at a fiscal cliff in the 2027 year. Projections for sales tax and property tax revenues are not great, and that's how we get our money. And so it's a large payment a month to repay. And I did not take it lightly, and I do not, I understand Supervisor Wilson's vote of no. However, the county could have avoided this had they done the maintenance at the time, and that the veterans didn't They didn't want a new hall. They wanted their hall. And we're responsible for, not me, but the county is responsible for the destruction of that facility. And they owed them a new one.
On a positive fiscal note, Humboldt County is set to receive over $43 million from Proposition 1 funds to support the construction of a new Semper Virens mental health facility in Eureka. What kind of impact do you expect this will have on behavioral health care and the broader community?
Sure. So I'm ecstatic that we received these funds. Semper Virens is 14 beds currently and in a very old facility. It means for the community that we could have extended services for mental health services. And, you know, across California, Proposition 1 is going to be supporting these facilities. And so it just means more mental health services available, which we struggle, the county struggles and the community struggles with mental health issues. And if you're on the opposite end and your child, your loved one is experiencing mental health issues, there are not a lot of options. And it's very scary because jail is not somewhere they need to be. They need services that they that can help them. And so this facility is anticipated to be complete in the year 2030, so not too far out. And it's going to make a huge difference to how we treat mental health patients.
Sticking with mental health concerns, especially as it intersects with homelessness, fire season is fast approaching. Your district, including Redway and Garberville, sees multiple vegetation fires each year connected to encampments. Is there any funding or strategy in place to reduce fire risk while also supporting unhoused residents in a meaningful way?
So we have been with the Sheriff's Department and code enforcement, have been cleaning out those camps north of Redway for a few months now. I was involved in one of the big ones that was across from the big turnout, myself and the Sheriff's Department and Ill River cleanup crew and 4 or 5 community members. So we did both sides of the road. And then I'm working with Humboldt Redwood Company to address the ones down in the Redwoods there. That's their property. And I think that there's not a lot of funding right now for this, although we have the Southern Humboldt Housing Solutions for All got that $3.5 million grant. And so they're working at housing some folks and getting them out of the places where they're not supposed to be. And so I think that we can see our hope, and I think it will work. And the Sheriff's Department is routinely every week going into those camps and saying, you can't be here. It's on private property. And so while there's not a place for people to be, and it just does really move them around, our hope is to keep them out of that area that is so sensitive to wildfire, and so that we don't have that problem this coming year.
Do you think the governor's recent memo urging stronger action on homelessness will change the way the county or the sheriff's office responds?
I think that it will and it can. It came pretty abruptly, his message. And I think that there's another something behind that because it's a kind of an exact opposite of what he has been saying in the past. And so I'm leery of the message, but hopeful that it'll be hopeful to the county and to the Sheriff's Department and to DHHS to be able to get these folks out of those camps and be able to enforce that. And it's not, I understand when people say, but where are they going to go? We have options for them to go to Eureka to get housing. They refuse to go. And I know everybody has a right, but folks also have a right to not be fearful of wildfires or the mental health issues that are going on around some of these folks. And so while the houseless folks have rights, so do community members to not fear, those things in their own homes.
And last time we spoke, there were ongoing concerns about Highway 36 closures. Things have quieted down a bit, but can you give us any updates on the status of repairs or lingering safety concerns?
I'm actually having a planning meeting with Caltrans next 3 weeks from now, but right now it is kind of status quo. The mountain is still moving. They have one lane blocked. They're anywhere from 15 to half an hour waits. They're trying, as the summer season comes around and a lot of people are working, trying not to hold people up for so long while still being able to do their work. Their hope is to, there's some trees up there that need to come down. They tried to get the helicopter up there to get those down. It's not safe to get a faller up there, and the helicopter was not successful. So at this point, it's kind of a wait and see, and what are we going to do? There additionally is construction that has been planned for years that is utilizing monies that, you know, grant monies. And so that construction is due to start also. They're assuring me that it won't be more than 15-minute waits. So while it's not going to be great, and there are going to be waits, I think the anticipated 2-hour waits are over.
And with just a few seconds left, is there anything else you'd like to leave listeners with today?
Sure. So we're going to be adopting a nitrous oxide ordinance around June 3rd. This will be a complete ban. I know that I have heard, you know, from some folks, why do I have to not be able to use my whipped cream? And I apologize for that in some aspects, but whipped cream can be made lots of ways. I shake it in a jar or use my, you know, blender thing. And this is a serious problem and we have to address it. And people say, don't, you're just taking an item away from them and not addressing the problem. We are addressing the problem, but you have to start somewhere. And we have, you know, help for these folks if they want to seek it. But it's a serious problem with young folks and it's killing people. And I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to dispense your whipped cream, but you can shake a jar or blend it up and it works just the same.
Again, that was Humboldt County's 2nd District Supervisor, Michelle Bushnell. You can catch our county conversations on the 2nd Wednesday of each month. If you have a question you would like asked, you can submit to news@kmud.org. In state news, Governor Newsom urges cities to clear homeless encampments with model ordinance and promise of funding. KPFA's Christina Onestad reports.
Governor Gavin Newsom's call for cities and counties to ban homeless encampments comes as his office released blueprint legislation for doing just that. While cities and counties do not have to adopt it, he could condition state funding on compliance. Newsom says residents are tired of homeless encampments in public spaces.
Tents and encampments. It simply cannot continue. It cannot be a way of life. Living out on the streets, in sidewalks, in what are almost become permanent structures, impeding foot traffic, impeding our ability for our kids to walk the streets in strollers or seniors with disabilities and wheelchairs, even navigating their sidewalks. We cannot allow that to continue.
The blueprint ordinance bans persistent camping in the same location and encampments blocking sidewalks or other public spaces. It also asks cities and counties to provide notice and make every reasonable effort to identify and offer shelter before clearing an encampment. Newsom says more tougher actions are coming down the pike. Carolyn Coleman, executive director and CEO of the League of California Cities, says 8 in 10 cities have policies that address encampments. They need money to address the root causes of homelessness, such as more housing. They're calling for dedicated, sustained funding over multiple years for permanent projects instead of sporadic, one-time funds. The California State Association of Counties says the state has not provided as much money to address homelessness as it says it has. Half the money has gone to housing developers. Homeless advocates are also pushing back. Alex Vistosky with the National Alliance to End Homelessness says studies show encampment bans and other punitive measures make it harder for homeless people to find stable housing and work to get out of homelessness. As part of efforts to combat the homeless crisis, the governor also announced $3.3 billion in grant funding for behavioral health care services, funded by Proposition 1 bonds that voters approved.
To 124 projects throughout the state of California and supporting 214 new facilities. You will see that almost every part of the state is included. 54 of the 58 counties will be receiving this unprecedented support. Almost 5,100, it says 5,000 residential treatment beds, just shy of 5,100 beds are going to be procured in this process, and over 21,800 outpatient treatment slots.
Among the funds Newsom announced, nearly half a billion is going to Bay Area counties, nonprofits, and for-profit behavioral health services, including St. Rose Hospital in Hayward, which faces financial strains and has closed its birthing center in February. Also, funding would go towards the Village SF, a new Native American health, wellness, and housing development in San Francisco. Sonoma County was awarded some $67 million for its Arenda Center, Contra Costa County, some $43 million for its Delta Recovery Center. More than $200 million is going to nonprofits in Los Angeles County. More than $90 million is going to Fresno County, including $60 million for outpatient community health clinic and psychiatric beds. Another $30 million going to Fresno Community Hospital and Medical Center. Newsom notes it's about half the more than $6 billion in funds available, and he called for changes to the state's bedrock environmental law, CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, to expedite construction of facilities in the state. But even 26,000 mental health beds represents a fraction of the 187,000 homeless people estimated to live on California's streets, many of them struggling with mental health and/or substance abuse issues. That's about a quarter of the nation's homeless population. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
Governor Gavin Newsom unveiled his revised state budget today, projecting a nearly $12 billion shortfall for the 2025-2026 fiscal year. The gap is largely blamed on what Newsom called a, quote, Trump slump. Economic fallout from tariffs, market instability, and declining international tourism. State officials estimate that California could lose up to $16 billion in revenue as a result. Senate leader Mike McGuire responded, calling it a tough year made worse by what he described as, quote, an openly hostile federal administration, close quote. He says the Senate will present its own budget plan soon and remains committed to protecting California's most vulnerable residents. KMUD News will bring you more on the revised state budget later this week. Californians have been rallying at state hospitals across the state this week to protest Medicaid cuts. Kennedy Cuello reports.
Over 100 healthcare workers and advocates rallied outside Wilma Chan Highland Hospital in Oakland. Joined by elected officials, the rally was part of a statewide protest against congressional Republicans' plan to gut $880 billion from Medicaid before Memorial Day. The changes are part of President Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill, a sweeping legislative package introduced by House Republicans this month. According to a University of California Berkeley Labor Center study, the move would result in California losing 217,000 jobs. Oakland Mayor-elect Barbara Lee spoke at the rally, saying Oakland will be the lead city in saying hands off Medicare. She says the cuts will hurt millions of Americans.
Thank you for coming together to send a sounding, resounding message to Washington, D.C., to Donald Trump, and to the Republicans in Congress, and to everyone to follow our California Democrats, to follow their lead and say, no, we're going to fight back. We're going to say no to Medicaid, hands off of Medicaid, and we're going to say no to cutting $880 billion. That's outrageous. It's wrong. It's immoral. It's unethical. It's un-American.
Highland Hospital patient and accessibility advocate Vashti Hayes spoke on the impacts cuts to Medicaid will have from the perspective of a patient. She is a lifelong recipient of Medicaid and said she received life-saving care from the hospital. She said the hospital is at risk of closing if Medicaid funding is cut and that it would devastate the community, and that this isn't just a local problem, that this can happen statewide. Hayes emphasized that healthcare is a human right and called on representatives to fight for it.
We all need healthcare, and we all deserve the dignity of receiving the care when we need it the most. So today, I urge lawmakers to listen to their constituents. People like me and people across California who rely on Medicaid to live.
State Attorney General Rob Bonta made an appearance at the rally as well. He said that he believes a society should be judged by how it treats its most vulnerable, and that the proposed cuts would be a failure. He said the cuts are not designed to save money, but rather to allow for tax cuts for the wealthy. Bonta calls Trump a repeat offender in violating the Constitution. He says during these times, it's important to remember that we the people have power.
We have agency in our future. We have a say. The people will have the first and the last word. The boss of Congress and the boss of the president are not Trump's billionaire buddies or greedy corporations. It is you and me and us, the people. Yeah. We will have the final word. Our country of, for, by the people. So we have a say. We have agency. There's a lot of chapters to be written in the story of California, the story of America, and we are going to write it together.
House Speaker Republican Mike Johnson of Louisiana aims to codify cuts to Medicaid by Memorial Day. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Quayle.
In national news, Trump's domestic agenda bill was heard in the committee as Democrats, Republicans, and protesters weigh in. Christopher Martinez reports.
House Republicans are pushing hard on legislation to enact President Donald Trump's domestic agenda with a massive legislative package that features tax cuts, energy production, and an immigration crackdown. It's likely to be the biggest legislative effort of Trump's second term. Two House committees took up the two most controversial parts of the package Tuesday. The Ways and Means Committee took up the tax part of the package with a 309-page draft. It includes some $4.9 trillion in tax cuts over a decade, mostly for the wealthy. Republican Jason Smith of Missouri chairs the committee.
If you look at our bill, we're delivering on the president's priorities. I sat with him on Friday, and I went line by line of the different items in this bill, and he was very happy with what we're delivering because it's delivering for working families, small businesses, and farmers. That is what this bill is all about.
Smith says if the bill does not pass, 207 million taxpayers will get a 22% tax increase when the tax cuts from Trump's first term expire. Smith says the bill will help workers who struggled under the Biden administration.
It holds elite institutions accountable and ends tax giveaways to China and illegal immigrants.
The other big controversial area is cuts to health and social services. That was a topic in the Energy and Commerce Committee. Republicans and Democrats spoke out there, and so did others.
The chair. The chair will advise the audience that disruption of a congressional business is a violation of law and is a criminal offense. Please come to order.
Several protesters, some in wheelchairs, were escorted out by police, and the debate continued. This part of the legislation includes some $290 million in cuts to the SNAP food stamp program and cuts to green energy programs. It also includes an $880 billion cut to Medicaid. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries blasted the cuts in a news conference, saying Republicans, in his words, are trying to jam another GOP tax scam down the throats of the American people.
And they want to pay for it by sticking us with additional debt, trillions of dollars of additional debt, and by enacting the largest health care cut in American history, along with the largest cut to food assistance in American history, literally taking food out of the mouths of children, veterans, and seniors in this country. It's shameful.
Jeffrey says Democrats are going to hold accountable every Republican who votes for the cuts. But before those votes come, there'll be plenty of debate. House Speaker Mike Johnson hopes to send the Senate the bill by Memorial Day. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Christina Onestad, Kennedy Cuello, and Christopher Martinez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.